Hello everyone. Yesterday, Ukraine passed a grim milestone, over 1,000 days of this war. I'm talking about the full-scale war that began on the 24th of February, 2022, that Thursday morning. Won't forget it on the way to work finding out. How much longer is this war going to go on? Now, it could be anybody's guess, but my hunch is we're in the last 12 months. In a sense, it's been going on for 10 years since the spring of 2014, when Russia invaded the Crimean Peninsula. Only one person was killed in that. It was very, very easy for them. So like everything, the Kremlin told the most bare-faced lies. When Russian-speaking men arrived from the direction of Russia, wearing Russian army uniform insignia removed, with Russian army issue weapons. No, they weren't Russian soldiers, the Russian government said. They lied and lied and lied and lied before boasting they are Russian soldiers. And so then they illegally annexed Crimea, and they've done the same lying about the massive military buildup on Ukraine's border before the war began. The attempted murder of President Viktor Yushchenko, way back in about 2003, and so on. So saying this was no threat to anyone, their massive military buildup on Ukraine's border, saying that if Ukraine didn't want to do what they want, they would take military technical measures, but saying that was not a threat of war. And when they invaded, saying they would never claim a millimeter of Ukraine, claiming they never sent any conscripts in the war, that they would denazify Ukraine, there's no Nazi party, let alone Nazi government in Ukraine, and on and on and on, saying that Ukraine is not a nation whilst recognizing it's a nation state. Wow, it's just endless. The self-contradiction, the illogicalities, the blatant lies, and disgustful as well. So Russia already controlled about 10% of Ukrainian territory before the war began. At the height of the invasion, quite successful towards the end of April 2022, they controlled up to 30%. They shrunk back, and then in September 2022, the Ukrainian counteroffensive, they're pushed down to about 15% of Ukraine that Russia controlled. They're now about back up to 20%, you know, gained around Bakhmut and Wels, Vukhledar, Chasiv Yar, and so on, other cities that they're trying to get. The Ukrainian counteroffensive across the river Dnieper, a bit north of Kherson, hasn't succeeded. The Ukrainian counteroffensive in the summer of 2023 didn't break through the Sarovikin line, only made about 16 kilometers. They needed to make about 160 kilometers to get to the Sea of Azov and break the land corridor. So Ukraine came up with a audacious démarche in early August this year, their incursion into Kursk Oblast, that is in Russia itself. They didn't take the city of Kursk or even attempt to. Now, this mustn't be overstated, they control about 0.003% of Russia's landmass. They could have expanded that considerably. Would that have been risking it too much? Would they have been overstretched? But it was the first morale boost the Ukrainians had for some time. This is attritional warfare. Russia outnumbers the Ukrainians in population 3.5 to 1. Moreover, Russia has been much more successful in recruiting foreigners, Indians, Nepalese, Cubans, whoever, Uzbeks, Kyrgyz, Tajiks, a lot of these guest workers from former Soviet countries volunteering, the last to be hired, the first to be fired. When they will need to renew their visas, they're called aside and told, well, you'll get this and you'll get citizenship fast-tracked if you volunteer. People in prison for petty offences, they are coerced into joining. Ukraine has allowed prisoners to volunteer, but not those convicted of certain offences, such as violent crime or sexual offences. On the other hand, how come a good man should get conscripted and killed, yet a dangerous criminal is going to be kept safe? Seems rather unfair. So Ukraine's allies have been very behindhand in their donations and their benefactions. And finally, the United States has authorized the use of Storm Shadow missiles. They're Franco-British made. I can't remember what they are in French, but longue portée, as in long range, is the end of SCALP. That's the acronym. Had this been authorized over a year ago, that might have changed the equilibrium a little bit. And the Russians would have suffered more casualties, been further back, had to be more cautious, and so forth. So they've always taken the right decision, but way too late. Another thing is, I noticed there are going to be massive military cutbacks in the United Kingdom. There's loads of stuff that the UK can afford to give away because it's retiring some equipment quite early. So it could hand over all this to Ukraine. Maybe some of it will be given. £500 million worth of defense cuts. Yeah. And so these are things like various assault ships, His Majesty's ship Albion is now HMS Bullock, frigate HMS Northumberland. That is quite a big unit. Tankers RFA Wave, Knight RFA Wave Ruler, and Watchkeeper drones, 14 Chinook helicopters. And they can carry a lot of troops, 17 Puma helicopters. So these are over half a century old. At the end of their service life, given to the Ukrainians, they may well get destroyed in the war. They're not going to be using the United Kingdom anyway. It'd be giving away nothing. But, you know, the United Kingdom gave 2 minesweeper vessels to the Ukrainians, gifted them about 2 years ago. Crews are traded to the United Kingdom, but they can't get into the Black Sea because Turkey says, pursuant to the Montreux Convention, it won't allow warships of a belligerent nation into the Black Sea during a war. I mean, what the Royal Navy ought to do is sell them in under the White Ensign and then docked in Bulgaria, Romania, both NATO nations, and then handed them over to the Ukrainians. Now, the Turks might have been miffed about that. I don't know what they would have done. And just turn to tell me going to do it in the end. But the Ukrainians are suffering exhaustion. Their troops, sometimes they've been there for 3 years. They're going to get like 10 days off twice a year. Sometimes they've been cancelled because of exigency. It's grossly unfair. They're not all in this together. Some very healthy young men have managed to avoid the draft. The conscription age is 25. You're physically fit when you're 18. You're definitely legally an adult. But people are often only child. Oh, he's just a boy. And so they're not being conscripted, whereas guys up to the age of 60 are in the army who are just decrepit. And obviously, if you pony up financially, then you could bribe a doctor to say you're medically unfit for the border guards to get over the border. And Zelensky has tried to crack down on this semi-successfully. They can conscript a lot more young men, and the numbers problem would be solved. And obviously, you have to take some time to train them. The women can volunteer for the Ukrainian army, but they seldom do. It's over 95% male. The women are often in non-combat roles. And there's the International Legion for the Territorial Defense of Ukraine. A few thousand foreigners there. They're not paid substantially more than the Ukrainians. Ukraine can't really afford to do it. And our Western nation's going to fed up of donating money and kit to this risk of the mushroom cloud. Putin raising the specter of thermonuclear war again. We know he's having a bad day. I was worried in the beginning. I thought there's only about 1% chance on nuclear Western country. Now I realize it's about 0.1%. But there's a substantial chance he'd use nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons in Ukraine, even on only battlefield scale, to kill several thousand Ukrainian troops. But that would be bad enough. And now I know he's bluffing. He's been in a worse situation and he didn't do it. And what would happen to him? But, you know, his conventional military has been trashed. I was thinking about this. They were losing something like 1,200 tanks a year, producing about 800. That's a deficit of 400. But, of course, they had several thousand tanks beforehand. They had various museum pieces taken out. But that's very old-style technology, scarcely functional. And the same with loads of other things like howitzers. Planes, he's husbanded his Air Force. We know he loves his Air Force and indeed his Navy, so not really willing to risk them. Some of the Black Sea fleet been sent to Davy Jones's locker, other ships been crippled, and they're on the very eastern edge of the Black Sea. Some have actually in Georgian sovereign territory, in the illegally occupied Abkhazia. But he doesn't care about his troops. I hear these extraordinary figures of 1,500 Russians killed or wounded every day. Now, I take that with a fistful of salt. I think that's Ukrainian propaganda. People are too easily swallowing. It may be half that. But yeah, the casualties are telling for the Russians. I mean, their problem is they're suffering so many casualties. The Ukrainians are suffering casualties, not proportionally so much, mainly because they're defending. They can cede territory in return for reducing their casualties. But the way the troops have not had a break for so long, not being rotated sufficiently, and some of them are deserting. If you desert once, they're just being like let off without any punishment. Some of them are deserting a second and a third time. Over 1% of the Russian army has deserted in the last 12 months. Court-martialed. That's what we know of. They reckon it's a bit higher, maybe 2%, which doesn't seem very much. But that's obviously in the tens of thousands. Another point is it's far, far higher than it ever was before. And okay, that's partly because it's a war. But the Ukrainians may collapse. When are they going to crack? We just don't know. It can happen quite suddenly, and Russia could instantly make major gains. When I say major gains, I think not getting all the way to Kyiv. They're not good at exploiting breakthrough. Even the beginning of the war, to some extent, they had an element of surprise. Okay, there's a massive military buildup. You can see that coming. But they didn't know there was going to be a war. And even then, they didn't even manage to get to Kyiv. And that's like how many hours from the Belarusian border they're coming? Like a 3-hour drive or something? So they wouldn't be able to fan out and do this very fast. Their numbers problem is somewhat mitigated by the arrival of 10,000 North Korean troops. They say that up to 100,000 North Korean troops may come. Remember, North Korea's got a full-time army of over 1 million people. It's a slave state. These people are just pawns for the regime. And it uses them as slave laborers in China and Russia. And most of their salaries is below minimum wage, goes to the regime. In North Korea, if you get 3 meals a day, you're privileged. So that will help Russia a bit. But how long can they sustain this economically? The other thing is their mortgage system is coming into crisis. Inflation is cripplingly high, like 20%. Their interest rate has to be very high. They've had some of their oil refineries taken out, things like that. They've stopped supplying gas to Austria, but you know they're not finding enough customers. They're having to sell gas to China and India well below market price. Their national wealth fund will be finished by the end of the year. So they can continue into 2025, even all the way through 2025. Into 2026, I think that is very difficult. I mean, they could do that, but that's the risk of mass disorder, mass desertions, and so on. By that point, they really have run out of tanks and a lot of other things. So that's why I think some sort of peace, even an unofficial peace, later this in 2025 is probable. And even if it's a sort of a low-level frozen conflict with occasional skirmishing across the border. Right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.